Time is running out for the planet Earth.
It's impervious to all poisons.
It is an intriguing sensation.
It's a nuclear device.
Fun, fun, fun!
Yes, that's nice.
Statistically speaking, of course, it's still the safest way to travel.
It belongs to a creature from outer space.
It's a bird!
It's a plane!
It's very important.
It does not compute.
It's a trap!
All right, this is the premiere episode of The Geek Shall Inherit. I'm Daniel Pickett.
And I am Jason Lindsay. Happy to be here.
Jason and I have known each other for several years, and we talk on the phone all the time, and it's about a lot of nerdy stuff. And we thought, hey, what if other people could hear these conversations?
What if maybe there were other people out there that actually had conversations like this?
Right.
Could they exist?
And would be interested in the same sorts of things that we're interested in.
Right. I think what's key to a lot of geek and nerdy sort of conversations as a general, you know, sort of thing, they tend to sort of start in the, like a target, you know, the target that kind of comes out in a spiral, and they start
right
here and they kind of go all the way, and before you know it, 10 minutes later they're out here. And you're like that. My buddy Wyatt is like that. When I talk to Alex Ross, we have, you know, 4-hour conversations on the phone that have very little to do with, you know, what we initially started talking about. It's we cover the universe. So
we're 3 minutes in and you've already name dropped.
I have two major names.
That's
Wyatt and Alex Ross. And this actually started, I think, the seed was Comic-Con 2010.
Yeah.
You were interviewing me over at the Entertainment Earth booth.
Right, yeah.
All things Biff Bang Pow and the show and everything. And you said, God, we should do a podcast. And it was just sort of an aside. I mean, you weren't really even very serious about it. And then it seemed like you were serious about it.
I'm very serious.
It did take a little over a year.
I bought this microphone. That's how serious I am.
And here we are. I mean, it you know, it took a year, but with our schedules and pestering each other and everything, I think we're finally doing it. So,
and, you know, just to let you know a little bit about us, if you don't know about us already, I think the one thing that both of our significant others would say about us is that we have a vault of minutia. Mm. We can't remember our phone numbers.
Right.
We can't remember where we put things.
Right.
But by God, we know who was in what and who sang what.
Yep.
And what episode things happened in.
Yeah, I don't have room for that other stuff.
Like, and it's high time that be put to good use instead of just our loved ones looking at us disappointingly.
I've always said if there was a way to find some, you know, the way you watch the way we watch movies, and I'm always pausing and going, okay, now just real quick, that guy in the scene. You see how the funny thing about it is he was in a movie with her 20 years ago, and the line what he just said there, and she'll sit there patiently for a minute or so and go, right, okay, can we get back to the movie now?
I actually had that conversation last week, and was told not to do that anymore. She save it to the end.
She did the same thing. She's like, you know, I just want to watch the movie.
Yeah.
It's in, I know you know this stuff, but I make the mistake of assuming that she's going to find it as interesting as I am, that
right,
if I mention who this guy is or whatever. And yes, there's got to be a way to put that to better use. And, you know, these things like, you know, how to get to the airport and things like that, I don't have room for that.
No,
and stuff.
That's what cabs are for.
Exactly. I have to write those things down. I've been here how many times? I don't know how to get back. I seriously have to find out from you how to get back home from here because I don't remember what freeway to take. But, you know, I can tell you, you know, how many Jerry Rafferty singles, you know, made the top 20, you know, and that's, I think, far more important than knowing how to get home, frankly.
So, quickly about myself, I'm Daniel Pickett. Some of you may know me as Julius Marks. I've been writing about toys for over 10 years, taking lots of pictures. I've been a collector my whole life. I don't see that stopping anytime soon. I've got a lovely fiance, a daughter, and a dog.
I'm glad you put them in that order. I didn't know we were doing a bio.
Well, I just thought it'd be nice, you know.
No, yeah. Well, I mean, my name is Jason Lindsay, and the reason I know Daniel in the first place is through the toy company that I co-founded about 6 years ago called Biff Bang Pow. And we make toys, you know, action figures, bobbleheads. Now we're getting into some prop replicas and things like lunchboxes and other sundries. For, you know, loads of titles. It started with properties that, you know, I was very much in love with, like Flash Gordon, the film from 1980, The Big Lebowski, Dexter, the series on Showtime, and now we cover, you know, Twilight Zone and the Venture Brothers and all kinds of goodies, Doctor Who. But that's sort of, you know, my one of my sort of jobs and hobbies and avenues. And my main sort of bread and butter is voiceover work here in L.A. and production work, you know, writing and producing for different shows on television. Some you may have seen, some I'd probably never want you to see. The current series is called Wipeout. It's on ABC, and I'm the host producer on that show, so I write and produce. And
some people have seen that show.
I think a few people are familiar with it, probably, that are listening.
Yeah.
But I'm just a small part of that huge operation. And yeah, the toy thing, I've always been a collector, and I mean, not nearly the level that you're at. I mean, I've always been good about reaching a certain point and then going, I need to either start shifting gears or, you know, not recycling, what's the word I'm looking for? Where you just go through all your DVDs and split them up. And
yeah. You just sort of knowing shift
that
it around.
In 6 months, more DVDs are going to come in. Yeah. It looks good for a while anyway. So I've always been good about kind of knowing where I have to stop. And I've got a very, very understanding wife now.
I'm terrible at that, by the way.
I know. And I wish I had the patience and the space that you do, because there's a lot of stuff that I would, you know, I wouldn't know where to stop. But I think also that's the difference between you and I, too, with the toy thing, is that I interviewed you for the, was it 5th anniversary, 7th anniversary? What anniversary was it for the site?
Either 5 or 6, yeah.
Yeah, the 5th or 6th anniversary of AFI, I interviewed you, and one of the questions was, so what do you collect? And I thought it was going to be, well, I mainly collect these 3 or 4, and then some of this stuff is, you know, I dabble. And the answer you gave was about 17 major titles that you collect.
Yeah.
And then there was another list of like 10 or 12 that you sort of dabble in.
Yeah.
Which kind of shocked me, but
so I actually, at a previous house, I actually had a toy room, a dedicated toy room.
Just for toys.
And it got to the point where, you know, it wasn't fine just to be sort of lined along the walls with shelves. It started being like library style, where there were shelves coming into the room front to back.
Wow.
And a good friend of mine came into there one time, and he said, it's so disorienting to be in this room. He said, it's like that moment in like a detective film that he's been chasing the serial killer and he finds his hideout and it's like lined with articles about the detective and the camera sort of starts going all skewed. He said, that's what it's like standing in your toy room. So
that's a great analogy. Yeah. I know exactly what he means. No, it's funny. You know, all these, most people that are probably listening have a room like that or a closet like that or something. And, you know, I've now sort of been allotted, and I'm not complaining, you know, a few cabinets to have stuff in, and then a closet that I can sort of put stuff in. And, you know, my problem is that I think I'm just as obsessive about movies and DVDs and CDs, which,
yeah,
you know, I've certainly slowed down on CDs with downloading, but, you know, I really have to split up these 3 or 4 major pop culture categories, you know, for space. And
right.
I share a home with somebody, and so I have to really remember that I'm not living alone. It's cool, but, you know, like, I'll name drop again.
Sweet.
A friend of mine, Brian Heiler, who runs Plaid Stallion's website, which is an amazing website. Anybody listening should be looking at it right now. Put this thing down and go over and get on the computer.
They could actually do both. They could just open a separate window.
Yeah, but I wouldn't want him to miss anything.
Oh, I see.
And he's got, he actually sent me some cool pictures of his office sort of area. And it really is, you know, he sent these, you know, from coming through the door, the left wall, along the wall, along the back wall, along the right wall, up to the doorway. And it's just all these great cases. And it's stuff like, you know, rack toys from the 70s and Mego stuff and you know, 3¾-inch stuff and car, you know, Black Hole. But this whole pocket of merchandise that is, you know, right where we sort of grew up and the areas that we love. And it stops right about the early 80s, but it's right there. And the first time I looked at these pictures, I was like, I get it. You know, we're never part of the reason we do this, part of the reason we love this stuff, is a huge chunk of it. As I started writing on the Men of Action thing, when my first thing I wrote was talking about nostalgia and how much of this is driven by our childhoods or things that we were into as kids. And, you know, it's why Thundercats is something that's hitting right now. And everyone's going, oh, my God, I remember this. And now I'm digging this.
Right.
But you can never go back. You know, those sounds and smells that, you know, that bring back memories, or a song that you hear reminds you of that car or whatever. And I just looked at these pictures and I thought, you know, he'll never be able to go. We can't get in a time machine and go back to that drugstore or that store that we used to go to get stuff. But when he goes in this door and he closes the door and looks around with these display cases of gum card, whatever it is, it's like, right, this is as close as you're ever going to get.
Absolutely.
This is as close as you can be to being in that store in 1978 or something.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of indicative of all of us, and sort of why we love this stuff and why we have those rooms or those closets. And it's like, you know, it's a bit of a respite sometimes.
Certainly.
You
know.
Anyway.
So first topic let's talk about, now that everyone knows who we are, Comic-Con.
Yes.
Not too long ago, just wrapped that up. We both attended.
We did.
Feelings this time around? I mean, I know there's a lot of us that are getting older.
Yeah.
And it's becoming more difficult. And we say that we don't, you know, want to go year after year. Or,
yeah.
But we're always gonna, right?
Yeah, I think it's the biggest part of that is not wanting to miss anything. It's like,
right,
you want to be... You know, I never got the whole panel thing. I've never, even before I went as a, quote, you know, professional, I never understood the real, and I'm just not knocking anybody that does, the desire to sort of be in a panel to experience that thing or that bit of information. Remember the year that, like, they announced the last title of the last Star Wars film, I think it was?
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
They announced it in the panel.
Right.
And people were, you know, camped out the day before, because they're going to make the announcement, it's going to be there. And I thought, well, in 5 minutes, it's going to be all over the floor.
Right.
And on the internet, whatever. And that's kind of how I think of the panel. So,
well,
even
let me ask you this, though. Do you watch the DVD extras?
I do. Absolutely, I do.
Do you not feel like that's sort of the same thing, getting that behind-the-scenes experience for...
No, I don't. I feel like the DVD extras is the same as reading about that on... you know, Ain't It Cool News or something, the day that it happens or something. This 30th anniversary Raiders screening that they had with, and all of a sudden Harrison Ford shows up. You know, Spielberg's there, and all of a sudden, surprise, Harrison Ford's there.
Yeah.
I would have given anything to have been there. I mean, you know what I mean? Of course. Would I have, you know, spent 12, 13 hours in line to wait to get in there? No, I wouldn't have. Not anymore. I would have 20, 30 years ago. But... to me, it's kind of like I'm getting as buzzed off of reading about that as I would looking at the extra on the DVD. To me, I just the immediacy. There's so little. I'm sorry, I'm rambling here. I'm trying to get back to the Comic-Con thing, but there's so little immediacy left because, and this is to me one of the things we wanted to talk about in doing this podcast in the first place.
Right.
How little staying power there is with so much of pop culture that it's dwindling. Everything is just so instant, you know. It's so the information's all there, and Comic-Con, if I'd missed it this year, I would have been a little bummed out, but there really was not much that happened that I couldn't have found out, you
right.
know, 5 minutes later or something. But
so it's not you still want the information, you just don't feel like you have to go to the panel to get it. This it's sort of the Starlog mentality,
kind of, yeah.
Okay.
I feel like let someone else do that work.
Right.
I would rather,
that's what I have to do.
Yeah,
I have to be the guy to go get it,
exactly,
so that I can type it, then you can read it.
I would rather sort of... I love the whole walking around the floor and everything and then bumping into Ray Bradbury or, you know, these sort of... I think Agent Coulson, the guy from the... Bumped
yeah.
into him this year.
Yeah.
Just walking around, I'm like, hey, Agent Coulson. He's like, hey, man.
You well, if I can name like, drop, you know who I bumped into.
Was it Matt Smith?
Matt Smith, Doctor
yeah,
Who?
That was Matt
in
Smith.
In the hotel lobby?
Well, you know who I bumped into.
Who was that?
William Shatner.
Oh, that's right. Well, you didn't bump in. You had a little appointment.
I think my Shatner trumps your Smith.
I don't know.
I mean,
that's
are you kidding
I
me?
I know. It's...
Let's get a poll going right now in this podcast. Matt Smith, I Great love... Man. You know how much... Matt Smith to me is best since Tom Baker, hands down.
Really?
But William Shatner.
We'll get to that.
Yeah, we'll get to that. Anyway, back to Comic-Con.
Yes.
It was great, but yes, it is getting to be a bit of a burnout. You know, 4 or 5 days is a lot. A lot of handshaking and a lot of business cards and stuff. And I think it's you know, it's really good for us. And you know, I think I'll probably be there next year. But it's definitely lost a lot of the excitement. And that's just from going so many years,
yeah.
I think.
But do you think, because it's different for both of us now.
Mm-hmm.
I go as press, you go as a professional with a booth. Do you think you'd enjoy it more if we didn't have that piece of it where we could just go and do whatever we wanted?
No, you know what? I think I enjoy it more because of what we're doing.
Okay.
Because I think that it, in a way, it gives me a better excuse to be there.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, like before I sort of dug it as it was, and now I've got even more reason to sort of be there. And, you know, I think it's even more cool. I think it's cool to you know, it's hard to explain. I'm trying to find a way to word this that doesn't sound arrogant or something, where, because you do think about it. This is something that loads of people all over the world want to go to.
Right.
And many, many, many people can't go to for whatever reason. You know, forget just trying to get tickets.
Yeah.
Just, you know, getting over there from Germany is like impossible. You know.
Yeah.
We're very lucky that we live in LA that we can even go to this thing. And then to be
they
a,
pay
you know,
$400 a night for a hotel.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're
exactly.
Very lucky.
We're very lucky. So basically, I started a toy company just to go to Comic-Con to be able to be a professional.
Nice.
But no, I think it's even more cool than it was when we weren't going in this capacity, I think.
Do you think it's too big? Do you think it needs to be split into two weekends, like one for all the movie and TV stuff and one for actual comic book?
I don't know. I think I would answer that by saying I think there's a danger of it burning out somehow. Mm. I think you know, my thing that this year that I thought was very interesting, and this may not be a popular theory, because I'm thinking a lot of things I'm going to say on these podcasts are not going to be popular. I think sometimes I write things on your website that aren't very popular, but this is kind of how I feel. And you know, I'm proudly out as a geek, you know, and but I draw the line. You know, we've had these conversations where I think I'm more of a geek than a nerd, and that, you know, I'm not going to. I think we've got an embarrassment of riches right now with superhero movies and things like that. I'm not going to be as hypercritical. I will be when it's terrible, but if it's mediocre, I'm going to go, you know, move on. Anyway, what I was trying to say was all the studios and networks that opted not to go this year.
Right.
I think what's happened is they it took them forever to figure out the value of Comic-Con and why they should go, and the nerd and geek audience sort of going, well, this is a great idea, and why don't you make this movie, and so on. And then they started to kind of pay closer attention to it and make those movies and do those things.
Mm-hmm.
Watchmen, Scott Pilgrim, Sucker Punch, which I never even saw. But if Sucker Punch was not a geekasm, gorgasm, you know, nerdgasm type trailer, I don't know what was. And nobody cared.
Yeah.
And so the studio people are now starting to go, well, F you guys.
If they don't really show up,
they're not,
you know,
really
we do
show
this
up.
For you and you don't show up.
Why are we doing this?
Yeah.
It's easier to spend $5 and 20 minutes on
Sex and
Transformers
City 3.
Revenge of the Fallen or Sex and City 3 or Dark of the Moon, whatever the hell that thing was called, than it is to do something like Watchmen, which I still, you know.
But they didn't spend $5 on Transformers. They spent.
But you know what I'm saying.
They made a squintillion dollars.
I'm saying on the screenplay, like I'm joking, that there was no time spent on this thing.
Right.
They could have spent half that. In other words, they could have spent a third of what they spent on Transformers if someone else was doing it or whatever, wherever the hell that money goes. And they still would have turned out. You know, Watchmen, I truly feel that had it been PG-13 and had there been some more matinee-type names on this thing, it would have done much, much better than it did.
Mm-hmm.
But they stuck to their guns, and they did it the way everyone wanted it done, and they did it with people that were right for the parts instead of, you know, Ashton Kutcher or whatever. And nobody turned up. And then they complained about it. And so they're going, well, why should we make another Scott Pilgrim when we can make something like Sex and the City 3, and they'll turn out. And so I think that there's been a bit of a backlash to the whole Comic-Con vibe and the value of going and paying attention to what these people are saying. Because, you know, face it, there aren't a lot of people that truly have a passion for this stuff in those positions to make those things. They need people with passion to kind of point them in the right direction.
Mm-hmm.
So they're kind of going, look, we never wanted to sit at your table at the lunchroom anyway, you smelly geeks. You know, we'll go sit back with the jocks again. We tried this thing. We tried going to your mixer. But you know what I mean? We tried going to your thing. And now we're going to go back with the popular kids. We'll make, you know, we'll make Marmaduke 4 or something. You know, we'll get all the Wilson brothers to do the voices in Marmaduke. Owen, Luke. Anyway, so I'm rambling, but that's
but it's still, I mean, the population, I mean, because I've been going to it for 15 years.
Really?
Straight, yeah.
Okay, so I think it's this was like 7 or 8 years for me, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'd been to it previously before I moved to L.A. once, but, seven years ago,
the first time I went, I was at a bar the night before with a buddy of mine, drinking fairly heavily. He had a little bit more than I had, and just throughout the evening, we're just like, "Hey, you want to go to this? You want to go to Comic-Con tomorrow?" Like, "Yeah, how do we?" We'll just get in the car and just drive down.
Yeah, and you could,
and we did. We got coffee. We got like some donuts. We got in the car. We were halfway down. You know where when you get down and you know where the big white breasts are? What is that?
Yes, the nuclear power.
The nuclear power plant thing.
Yes, and
I'll never forget because he said, "Pull over, pull the car over," and I'm doing 80. And I pulled the car over, and you know, you're on that freeway that's so fast that even when you pull over, the car is shaking.
Yeah.
As cars are going by, because they're going so fast. And he hurled up his shoes from the bar the night before.
Wow.
Anyway, so we got there and didn't have passes. It was crazy, but I still walked up to the thing and, you know, put on my improv hat, and I just went, "Well, I'm supposed to meet my crew here. What do you mean you're not going to let, I can't get in?" But they're in there waiting. "Oh, this is ridiculous. Craig, what are we going to do?" And my buddy was kind of like, "Eh," and he was still hungover. And eventually the woman was just like, "Okay, you know what, here." Gave us a couple of passes, and we waltzed in and just hung out on Saturday and finished the day and went home.
And Sunday was a light day, you know, it was kids' day.
Yeah.
And you could actually walk the floor and stuff. But now every single day is sold out.
Well,
every single day the fire marshal is, you know.
Preview night has become like that a few years ago when
preview
I first
night,
said it
yeah,
was
that
it
used
was
to be
nothing.
Just for locals, you know.
And now it's like, I remember seeing you, I think it was on Friday or Saturday.
Yeah.
And you were just exhausted. You had all these bags and you were with Abby and you had your camera and everything. And you said, "How was preview night?" Maybe it was preview night. I forget. But I said "This looks like Saturday."
Yeah.
It looks like a Saturday here. Yeah. It was mental. But I do love it, and I always, as much as I bitch about it, I do get wistful when it's done. When you drive away, you kind of go, this is a really cool, like all these like-minded people. You don't, as much as geeks and nerds, you know, they bitch and piss and moan about things all the time, you don't find a lot of unhappy people at Comic-Con.
No.
You see a lot of smiles walking around.
Yeah.
Everybody seems to be really happy.
Yeah.
You
get to fly your freak flag as high as you want.
Dress up like a whatever and you know, no one's going to blink.
Yeah.
You know? Well, there was that year that there was a guy walking around in he had no shirt on. He was bald. And he had denim shorts and flip-flops. And he had a bit of a tummy.
Yeah.
And I thought, you're either Carl from Aqua Teen Hunger Force without a shirt or you're just a creepy
shirtless pedo guy
that showed up to walk around Comic-Con.
Yeah.
I don't know what's going on there, but on that note, have you ever dressed up at Comic-Con?
I never have, no.
No.
My roommate at Comic-Con this year, Mr. Dan Newman.
Oh, yeah.
Also from the site.
Oh, the Plastic Man thing.
Did the Plastic Man thing, yeah.
Which is amazing.
Yeah, yeah. And, you
know, Dan Newman could pull that off.
That is true,
yeah. You truly have... That is the definition of a man's got to know his limitations.
Yeah.
Only a Dan Newman could make that outfit and make it work.
And, you know, he's done a little bit of blogging on it. I think there's more blogs to come. But just his mindset around the cosplay thing, it's a very interesting... window.
And, I think I read that.
And choosing, you know, what costume for what body type. And,
yeah.
And, you know, it was fun. And you know, he couldn't go, you know, 30 seconds without someone saying, "Can I take a picture with you?"
It was dynamite. It was dead on. But it is, you do see a lot of the, I guess, I don't know if cosplay is the right word.
That is the correct word, yes.
But isn't that what you'd say, even if it's just a casual, someone's just doing it that one time, like they decide one, okay.
Yeah.
That you go, "Listen, I'm not trying to be mean here. All takes all shapes and types. But you would not make it past the Starfleet physical in that outfit." I don't remember ever seeing anyone with your body type on the ship back in the 60s. You know, there. You know what I mean? You see certain, you kind of go, I don't know if you should, you know. But Newman, with that thing, you're like, that's perfect.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
So, yeah, fly your flag, but Know your limitations if you can.
Any big surprises for you out of Comic-Con? Anything? Did you pick up any exclusives?
What did I pick up? I picked up the Indiana Jones.
The box set.
Box set, because that was just, I thought, really, really cool. And it was the anniversary.
A great gift from Hasbro. Never thought that would happen.
No, I know. That is a really good example of somebody somewhere at the company paying attention to the fans and being so disappointed by that thing not happening. I thought that was really cool.
And you know, a little bit of... I hope it's sort of a flag post, you know, for...
Future.
For the future, yeah. Because I know the line at retail didn't do great.
Right.
But, you know, I think there were some character choices and sort of starting backwards. But
imagine...
This thing sold gangbusters.
It totally did. But, you know...
And it's exactly what we wanted.
What Hasbro's doing now, and I guess we'll get to this later about, like, things that we're sort of picking up, but I love the whole vintage carded thing that they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And I love it for many reasons, most obvious being it's so nostalgic from when we were kids and the Star Wars figures that were out there. The articulation, the sculpting and everything is everything that we've wanted from the time they relaunched in the mid-90s, late-90s, that we could have this for Star Wars figures, and the accuracy and the sculpts and everything.
Yeah.
The fact that Kenner's on the packaging. But the packaging itself, it's so attractive to me. It's so... You see it up there against the... And again, this isn't trying to knock any companies or you know, people that collect whatever, but like... The regular Hasbro Star Wars stuff, the Saga collection or you know, whatever it is. Compare those, even the newer ones, even the ones that are out from the new films, I mean the newer trilogy. Put those next to that blue sort of scheme of the Hasbro ones that are out now. It's like you can't even come close. So I just think if the Indiana Jones line had been done the same way.
Oh, right.
With imagine like pictures of the characters next to it and with that whole vibe. I think it would have been a totally different story. Even if the sculpts weren't as great as they were in some of the character choices, if you gave me a Kyro Swordsman newer one in that packaging,
right,
with a still from the film and then some cool, you know, literature on the back or whatever, it would have been a different story.
And just staying on that vibe a little bit, it's interesting. I don't know if you read coming out of the Comic-Con and the Hasbro panel that going forward with the vintage Star Wars figures, they're going to, on the back, they're going to do the vintage, like the colored boxes with the figures in it like they used to be back in the Kenner days.
Colored boxes?
Yeah, you know, when you look at like a 23-back Star Wars
card, oh, cool.
That's what they're going to look like.
Oh, nice.
And doing, you know, I love the figures and stuff, but they are killing me with doing the vintage packaging on the vehicles and stuff.
Because you want to get them all, you mean?
I want to get them all, and I already own them.
Yeah.
You know, I know they're doing, you know, like the new AT-AT and stuff was in the new box, but it's just like, do I need another Y-Wing?
See,
do I need another X-Wing? But it's in that package, and it's like Christmas morning.
And that's where I'm able to draw the line.
79, really?
I mean, I've written about this, that Millennium Falcon is one of my prized possessions from being a kid, because it was one of the greatest Christmas presents I ever got.
Yeah.
And I think that thing has come out how many different times now since the relaunch?
At least four, yeah.
I've never picked it up. I mean, I'm not going to lie. I see it and I want to get it. I look at it and go, ooh, that's really cool. But I draw the line at the... I mean, maybe I do like a Tauntaun. I probably
Well, you're going to get that chance. The Tauntaun's coming out in just a bit.
Is it the split belly, though, or is it the...
I think... I don't care remember which version they're doing.
I want a split belly.
All right.
I think they should do that.
I'll split your belly right.
I picked up a few exclusives. Did you pick anything up when you were...
I picked up a crap ton of stuff, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
More than I probably should
Stupid have. Question. I don't know why I even asked, did you pick anything up? That's just...
Yeah. I got the Indiana Jones set. I got the Thor from Hasbro, the Marvel Legends Thor.
I didn't get that.
All of the Mattel stuff. I got that ridiculous... Kubrick, that Green Lantern Kubrick, because it's on a superpowers card.
Okay.
Absolute mark for anything superpowers.
Did you get the Spidey Mighty Mug with the takeoff, pull-off mask? I got that.
I didn't get that for myself, but I picked that up for another buddy.
I thought that was cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
I like, you know, like with the DCU stuff and like the Marvel stuff, and you talk about being a sucker for whatever. I like accessories.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like even like the Masters of the Universe stuff, whatever. Like, you know, like that Manny faces.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's got like an extra face thing that you pop in there.
Yeah.
You can do something with it. It's got a gun. If the thing just is just, you know, Batgirl in a stand, like, eh, I'm going to pass it up. Hmm. But if it's Batgirl with, like, a Batmite and, like, four accessories and whatever, I'm more inclined to pick it up.
Okay.
So the Mighty Mug I wouldn't have gotten, but the mask came off.
Yeah.
I like that.
I did love the, and I, again, I didn't get it for myself, but picked it up for someone else, the Avengers Mighty Mug set.
Oh, that was cool, yeah.
That was really well done.
Yeah, that was very smart.
You know, that was, it was great. Yeah. You know, so I got a Marshmallow Man from...
I was tempted.
That giant Tempur-Pedic Marshmallow Man.
I got that. I got the Swamp Thing.
Okay.
I picked that up because even though it's disproportionate and all that from the other whatever, I think it's a beautiful figure. And
or is he disproportionate?
Well, there's
reading
that.
The last panel of the new Swamp Thing 52, he's that size.
So they're saying
it was just forward vision.
Oh, really? Well, that would make sense that they're doing it in conjunction with... Because, see, I'm not reading the 52 stuff, so...
I mean, I get fans' complaint about he's bigger than most figures, but Swamp Thing is one of those characters that does change sizes.
Yeah.
I mean, he's big as a building.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I would...
Some of the old Alan Moore things.
If I'm going to have the other ones, I would like it to be closer in scale to the other DC figures. If he was a little bit bigger, I'd be fine with that. But it is very much... It was like a 10-inch?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a big... and but the packaging is fantastic.
But it's interesting because, you know, this is a complete tangent, but that's how our conversations go.
There we go.
But we're just now sort of seeing, you know, the things that were seeded in DCUC coming out with this new 52, like that character, Nightlick, that John's created. He's in, like, the last panel of
Now, where did that name come from? It's such a strange name.
I don't know. That's real weird. Maybe we can have a guest on that can talk about that.
Interesting.
In a future podcast.
Yes, it's the spelling that throws me.
Yeah. But that, and then, like, the Swamp Thing at the end, just like, well, they, you know, I think they got some direction from DC's publishing
thing. I would
thing.
Think
and,
they
and
have
And at
to,
the time, yeah, but the fans are just like, why can't you get things right? And it's just like,
they don't. You know, fans sometimes,
6 months later.
Believe me, being on the other end of this, they don't know. They don't understand that. Yeah, it's like you don't just press a button on a Friday and have the toy out next Wednesday. It's you have to really line all this shit up, as they say. Are we allowed to swear on this podcast?
Well, that's kind of up to us. I don't know.
All right, good.
I mean, maybe we can beep that out.
I just dropped an S-bomb, and I think we should keep it in.
I don't know. Do you want to swear?
I don't know.
We didn't make that. We didn't talk about that ahead
We didn't.
Of time.
But I just think that if kids are listening, they you know, the sooner they're exposed to this, the better. I think.
Right. Kids, get your parents' permission.
Pull your socks up, and this is what it's like. This is what life is. There's going to be swear words.
Right.
Doesn't mean you have to use them, you know? Uncle Jason, maybe, maybe he's using too many
Uncle
of them.
Jason.
Salty Uncle Jason is using too many, but I think I've held off a good amount of time
That's
here
right,
on this.
Yeah. So let's next talk about summer movies. And most of them are coming out on DVD.
They are.
We liked, what we didn't like.
They are.
We had a trio of Marvel movies come out.
Yes.
Do you have any favorites out of that? X-Men First Class, Captain America, Thor?
I just want to say, first off, because we talked about this when, I think, after I'd seen one of the three of those, I love the fact that I'm living in a world that I am sitting in a theater about to see Thor, seeing a trailer for X-Men First Class, followed by a trailer for Captain America, the First Avenger. This is a world that I never thought we were going to live in.
Yeah.
We've waited a long time to have this many choices and variety, and maybe it's going to be, you know, oversaturation after a while, but I'd rather have this many choices than you know, steel as the big summer movie. Having said that, easily favorite of the three, Captain America. I thought Captain America was about as cool as a comic book movie could get.
That is not the one I thought you were going to go with.
You thought it was going to be X-Men, didn't you?
Well, when we first talked about it, you said X-Men, but then you just said you watched Thor again on DVD, and you were like, well, now Thor's my movie. So you
I said
you liked it better the second
time. Yes, I said I appreciated it more the second time.
But you did tell me you liked it better than X-Men. After watching it a second time.
You know
time.
What? It's funny. I did, because watching X-Men again a second time, look, the positive stuff in X-Men, clearly, Fassbender playing Magneto and McAvoy playing Xavier, they're the two best things in it, but mainly Fassbender. He's so good in that movie that when he's gone, I just can't wait for him to come back. Mm-hmm. Just about every scene that he has. He reminded me of Connery in the early Bond films, the way he just kind of walked through a scene and the whole vibe. And I think that was intentional with the time frame and everything else. But there is a lot. And sometimes I gauge this by, you know, Diane, watching it with Diane, where it doesn't matter if it's sci-fi, horror, you know, whatever. I mean, she's up for it. She'll check it out. She doesn't know the mythology of these characters or whatever, but sometimes I try to kind of put nostalgia and that love that we have aside and try to see it through her eyes a little bit. Mm-hmm. And we watched X-Men on DVD. And again, all the stuff that I dug, but the things that bothered me, they bothered me a lot more watching it the second time. I didn't like the music, for starters. I know this is very nitpicky, but there are times where the music is just completely inappropriate. It's just very, very strange. Didn't really dig the other X-Men. I certainly didn't dig what they did with Beast. I don't like the makeup that they used for him. I didn't like the little girl with the dragonfly wings and some of that stuff. I liked Bacon, but I thought they could have gone further with him, and mm-hmm. especially the mythology with his character in the comic books and stuff. And it felt very rushed to me. They and rightly so. They were trying to
get
so much
rushed, yeah.
information in there, and so many set pieces that it did start to feel very, very jumbled. So I guess that the what disappointed me was that it was so good with him so much of the time that when it was weaker, it was very weak to me. Hmm. But again, better than 90% of what is put out as movies. I still think it was a great movie. It just, I think Thor was more consistent, and you know, the whole Asgard, a lot of people were bored with it and thought it was too big and bombastic, but it reminded me of Kirby's stuff. I thought it was very accurate, you know, and again, with a character like him and a character like Captain America, it's I think it's incredibly tricky casting, because you really have to nail it.
Yeah.
Because Thor is this larger than life sort of ridiculous character that's walking around. He's a god or whatever. And I thought they just nailed it with this guy. I thought he was just like dead on. And Evans as Captain America was perfect.
Yeah.
I just thought he was, the fact that you forget after the first 10 minutes you're watching this guy on a skinny body, that they nailed that technology so well.
And that they had to. I mean, that would have been such a sore thumb.
I mean, what it's
all
like
those, all those effects people.
It would have had to have been done now. You know what I mean? Like or you it would have been shortchanged, or they would have skipped over that origin.
Yeah.
Because it had to be available to be done now with that technology, you know. But I thought it was just about as cool as a comic book movie could get. I loved it.
So for me, I really did love X-Men First Class, mm-hmm. and I have been disappointed in the other X-Men films.
All of them?
Cared for. Two I thought was okay, but the others, yeah.
See, I thought two was wonderful.
I'm saying two.
You said okay, though.
Right.
Yeah.
But this First Class, and I was worried going into it because I knew that it was rushed because they were trying to keep the rights and, you know, the writing and the production.
Right.
And it exceeded my expectations further than I thought it could.
Mm.
I haven't watched it a second time. I just I picked it up, but I haven't watched it again. But I was just like, I would love to see this universe continue.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought in some ways they sort of tied the continuity together tighter than the comics.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was really impressed with what they did. Thor, up until I saw it, I would have told you it couldn't be done.
Mm-hmm.
You could not make a compelling Thor mm-hmm. movie. I used to read Thor.
Mm-hmm.
I read it, and you know, all this. I still have all the issues from like the Simonson era and mm-hmm. all that. Blown away by how good it was, how charming it was,
wasn't it? Yeah.
And the thing Marvel is really nailing, apart from building a universe, which mm-hmm. we've never seen anyone do mm-hmm. in films before,
mm-hmm.
is making sure they're spending the money and getting the right people for all the supporting cast,
mm-hmm.
so that every one of these movies has the heart they need for you to care about these characters.
I would agree with
that.
Like
Stanley Tucci and Captain America,
mm-hmm.
you know, that could have been, it could have been anyone.
Yeah.
But the fact that they got him, and that it meant so much, it made all those scenes, you know, it just made that gel so solidly.
No, so. I agree. The only snag I found in Captain America, and this is just me being anal about it, is Howard Stark. And his name just escaped me, but he was in The History Boys. He's in Tamara Drew. He's a great British actor. He's a young guy, and he's a handsome fellow, and he played Howard Stark. Doing an American accent, and one of my big... Oh, it drives me nuts. Like Tom Wilkinson, everything Tom Wilkinson's in, doing an American accent. It's like, just if you can't do it, just either get someone else that's American to do it. It's the same thing with trying to do a bad British accent. It drives me nuts.
Which we'll do in one episode.
Yeah, we should. Just do bad accents throughout. Yeah. His accent was just all over the place, and it made me crazy. Yeah. I didn't ruin it for me, but I would say that of all of them, the casting in that was the best. With Tucci and Tommy Lee Jones, like we've seen Tommy Lee Jones in everything Tommy Lee Jones is in, he's Tommy Lee Jones. Like I said, and you know, in even the pictures of the early trailers, you're like, oh, here we go, Tommy Lee Jones again. And then he's in there, and you're just like, you need Tommy Lee Jones in this thing. You need that cynicism. You need that guy. And he plays it better than anybody. So, like, what a perfect job, you know. I love the, you know, Haley Atwell as the girl in it, and or sorry, the woman in it. I just loved it. But Evans, I thought Evans just freaking walked away with that movie. I mean, it is, again, you said it very succinctly, very well. I never would have thought they would have been able to make a compelling Thor based on the subject matter and the, you know, the way the comic was. Well, you know, these conversations I'd have with Ross about, because he's, you know, if anybody is uptight about casting, it's Alex Ross. I mean, he's like,
he could be listening to this, you know.
He doesn't
he doesn't get on the internet.
No, right. He doesn't use email. But he, you know, he's never been pleased with, you know, maybe 3% of the casting in superhero movies. But we talked about this, and we kept saying all along, it's got to be someone like Jon Hamm, or it's got to be someone like The Rock. You know what I mean? Like The Rock.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, that's what I think of when I think of Captain America. Like a guy that is that big, that is, you know, built like that. And so when Evans was announced, I was like, oh, I like this guy. I've liked him in just about everything that he's been in. I loved him as the Torch, you know. And Ross, like, I don't know. I still think they made a mistake, whatever. Well, he's got the chops. He's got the acting chops. And then, you know, the thing that they hit home. And I again, it's been ages since I've read any of the old, you know, Cap comics, and certainly the origin stuff was that Tucci's whole, you know, miss it. What he's saying, you know, a man with strength that already is a bully or already a strong guy is not going to know the value of it when it kicks off.
Yeah,
this guy is already a good man. What we've seen, and you see her fall in love with the guy as a skinny guy.
Yeah,
before the super serum kicks in, the soldier serum kicks in. And he just nailed it, I thought. He just, again, he's kind of a one-note character because he's just such a good guy.
Yeah.
So, you know, all the Marvel characters all have that. They're all haunted by something.
Yeah.
Except for Thor, I guess. But they're all kind of haunted by it. And his thing is going to be being the man out of time. That's what they sort of had to...
Yeah, I'm so glad they made it a period piece.
Me too.
That's
bold enough right there. I mean, that people is, that are complaining. Yeah, yeah. I'll tell you what I don't get. And, again, we'll see where the backlash starts with these... podcast. I will never understand the complaint coming from anybody, but mainly the nerd crowd or the geek crowd, or whatever, about the Easter eggs and the little hints that are being put into these Marvel films.
They don't like them. Someone's
they don't saying. Like them, or they complain that, like, well, that just seemed like a preview for the Avengers, and that one, you know, like, I've got one friend who remained nameless that it was, you know, kind of half joking about, God, you know, is Nick Fury going to be in every post-credits, you know, sequence, and God, you know, enough of that. It's like, this is what reading comic books was.
Yeah.
This is what they're doing. They're trying to make it feel like, you know, you enjoyed this, get over to Spectacular Spider-Man issue 270 to finish the story or whatever.
Yeah.
And have those little, you know, winks and clues. And, I mean, this, you know, we never thought there'd be a world where these characters would be in different movies. Or, like, Hawkeye shows up in Thor. I know it was last minute, but people actually complained about his cameo.
I'm shocked by that. Because the flip side of it, you know, the next thing we're going to talk about is Green Lantern.
Yeah.
Green Lantern got stripped of all that. There was a bunch of that in the original script.
Yeah.
And it's gone.
Yeah.
And they're, you know, DC's making the choice that every character is a separate universe. That was the big problem I had with, you know, when DC started doing those straight-to-video animated things.
Oh, yeah.
The first one they did was Superman Doomsday.
And, oh, yeah.
In the original story, you know, the death of Superman, that whole thing where Doomsday breaks out of the vault and he's literally bashing his way across the country, slaughtering, you know, Justice League members and just beating his way to the East Coast to kill Superman.
Mm-hmm.
And in this movie, there's no other superheroes. So
God, I barely remember.
He, like, kicks a dog and, like, throws a truck.
There's a Kevin Smith cameo in it, though. That was important to get in there.
And then that's it. You know, it's just like, so I feel like I need that more and I'm not getting it from DC.
Well, yeah, we'll get to the DC thing, but just back to the Hawkeye thing. Yeah, just to give you an example, the complaint was, well, he didn't do anything. You know, you put him in the movie, and then he doesn't do anything. You know, we didn't get to see him fire his bow and arrow. It's like, really? You're actually complaining about his
he had a bow and arrow
45 second cameo. You can't just get a bit of a semi by going like, oh, fuck, that's Hawkeye.
Yeah.
Oh, they put Hawkeye in the movie. That's cool. Like, we haven't seen him in the flesh yet.
Right.
Instead, go, well, is he going to shoot something? You know, like, well, can't you just wait like
guess
a year?
Guess what? He will. He's
yeah.
Right.
Just,
yeah, yeah.
You know,
he's going to shoot a lot of stuff.
Be a little more patient.
Give
and
him time.
We'll get to it, you know?
I loved in Captain America, the first time you see Armin Zola, it's in that big magnifying glass. I was just like, that was such an awesome Easter egg.
But you know what? So it's again, sorry to name, but Ross had to point that out to me because I knew the name and I was like, is that the guy I'm thinking of? And I didn't catch that until we talked about the movie afterwards, and he said, yeah, that's the chess piece and the head down there. And I totally missed it when I laughed
out loud in the theater. And everyone turned to look at me.
Yeah, no, it was. I just thought it was brilliant, and I can't wait to see it again and see what's next. But Green Lantern, yeah, it was. You know, it was not a movie that I was hugely looking forward to. Like, I was definitely up for it. I just I didn't hate it the way people hated it. I didn't think it was terrible the way people. I mean, I think there's some decent stuff in there. Mark Strong is fantastic, and just about everything he does. But yeah, it was just kind of...
As Sinestro, for those who that don't recognize
As Sinestro. But, you know, the whole training sequence and let's just start with the outfit, you know, being the whole thing being CG and the mask being CG and how distracting it was.
And for instance, that technology didn't work as well. That mask did not track on the face.
Terrible idea.
Like Captain America on the skinny body.
Right.
It didn't work.
No, it was a terrible idea. I knew from the trailer that... What's his name? Sarsgaard. How do you say it? Peter?
Yeah.
Sarsgaard.
Uh-huh.
I just knew that was going to be silly. I know it's kind of like that in the comic book, and it sometimes his head gets even bigger in the comic book, but you're going to have a tough time not having that be silly with a guy with a mustache in the movie. It just was kind of meh, you know? I didn't walk out of there like going, damn you, Warner Brothers, or anything. Yeah. I was like,
For me, it was fun but flawed. And my biggest complaint about it was to introduce 3,000 of these characters, this army, and then send a menace to Earth born out of this thing, and for them to go, if you could just take care of that for us, that'd help us a lot.
We don't want anything to do that. Not only have we spent loads of time with the design and the animation of all these characters and creatures, we're not going to give you that either. You're not going to get to enjoy that on the screen.
Yeah.
Go spend more time with Blake Lively, you know, in the office.
And I know that the original script for it was very, very different.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
I heard
Parallax
it was more...
was not the villain.
Yeah.
Most of it took place off of Earth.
Yeah.
You know, it was the Sun Eater was coming, and there was a lot more with the other Green Lanterns. And I think...
They should have just kept it. They should have kept it off Earth, and the next film should have been something bad's going to happen on Earth. It should have been, you know.
And I know you've got a big name like Ryan Reynolds. It's important for them. You know, the arc of it was, you know, the screw up becomes a hero, and I think it would have been more compelling to make it the screw up becomes the leader. You know, and then that sets off his feud with Sinestro even more so.
Yeah.
If he sort of rises up and takes over.
They just this whole I'm afraid to go to the bathroom, I'm afraid to get up in the morning, I'm afraid. They beat you over the head with that. This guy is like, this is the guy you chose to be the most heroic. How afraid he is. And you know what? You just said it. Like, we get a big star like Ryan Reynolds. It really is he though? Like, why is he such a big? I don't. It's like Nicole Kidman. Can you name me four? Nicole Kidman's like one of the most expensive actresses to put in a movie. Like, I don't know. Like. Makes like $20 million a movie. Name me the last Nicole Kidman movie that made any money.
Moulin Rouge.
Okay. Now tell me the year that came out.
That came out. I don't know.
2000 or 2001. So Ryan Reynolds, like what
two
is
Two Guys,
he,
a Girls, and a Pizza Place.
Granted, a fantastic sitcom. But what has he done that I don't understand why so much of the comic book community or geek world thinks that Ryan Reynolds should be the guy for the Flash. They talked about him as the Flash. They gave him, they made him Deadpool. They gave him Green Lantern, and clearly
his personality does work better for sort of a Wally West Flash, though.
It does more than Green Lantern. But yeah, like again, compare that performance to Michael Fassbender as Magneto or Chris Evans as Captain America, and if anything, Ryan Reynolds is certainly better known than both of those guys.
Yeah,
really.
I actually had this conversation with Abby the other day. I thought, you know, I was watching something, I don't know, it may have been Damages or something, and Timothy Oliphant, I think, would have been a much better Hal Jordan.
Oh, you
know,
yeah.
He's a little old, because I, you know,
he's great.
I also think Nathan Fillion, you know, I know that fan-made thing.
Yeah.
I know he's a little too old, but mm-hmm. I think you could sort of fake the Timothy Oliphant.
I love him, too. He's a great, Justified's a great show. And
it's
he's
a great show.
He's terrific in it. I think he needs
some... I was watching The Crazies.
Oh, that's a good movie.
That was kind of fun.
That's a pretty good remake.
Yeah, yeah.
There's some really scary crap in there.
Yeah.
That's the guy going to the ball game at the beginning.
Yeah. That when I was watching that, I was like, you know what? He would have been great.
Yeah. No, he would have been good. Yeah, and again, you know, when I think of Captain America, like, I thought of all those names that we sort of bandied around before it came out or was announced, and then when it was him, there was a bit of a, well, you know, you used him already. Like,
yeah,
how is this going to work? And then it was like, well, I like everything he's done. And now having seen it, it's like, I can't think of anybody else,
yeah,
you know. Like, but, you know, it goes back to The Rocketeer, too. Like, 20 years later, you know, Rocketeer is now getting its due, and it's going to be on Blu-ray, thank God. And I've always loved it. And people were like, well, Joe Johnston, really? The guy that screwed up the Wolfman? And, you know, it's like, really? Have you seen anything else the guy's done? Like,
yeah,
it was really smart to have him do this film. And not to mention the pedigree he has with all the Lucasfilm and Star Wars stuff that he's done.
Right.
But... Billy Campbell, I thought, was like one of the best casting jobs done in
yeah
a comic book movie. Like, he was Cliff Secord. He was just perfect.
He totally was.
And it was always too bad that he never went on to... He did stuff, and he clearly had a career.
Once and again.
Again,
and
fantastic
he's in the killing,
show.
The Killing!
The Killing, and what's the show that the people get abducted?
Taken?
Was it Taken? No, no, no.
It was the 4400?
4400.
Yeah, yeah.
4400. No, he did lots of stuff, but
yeah,
I always was hoping that Rocketeer would have been a franchise. But so I was very pleasantly surprised that the period setting didn't hurt Captain America,
yeah,
that they stuck to that, and I loved it.
All
right. Hugo Weaving was amazing.
Let's talk toys.
Yes.
What are you picking up these days? What have you
Not much.
Oh.
Just got married a while ago.
No one got you anything for your...
No. I've been trying to be careful with what I've been picking up, but I have picked some things up. I've been really... Thundercats has been a weird thing. I've been following the new show, and I like it. I think
okay
it's very well done. But I really honestly thought, actually at Comic-Con, because of Chancho McGee, who is the voice of Lion-O, his name is escaping me right now, but he was a guest at the Entertainment Earth booth, and I'm like, I forgot he was going to be here.
Right.
So I grabbed the exclusive...
the Bondi.
Tom something. His name is Tom something. Or something Kenny. Or Tom something. Not
Tom
Kenny.
Something strange last name.
And I had him sign the thing. So I thought, I'll get the classic Lion-O and... what's his name? The other one.
The Tigra.
Tigra.
Yep.
And that's it. I don't need the new stuff. Then the new stuff started to kind of come out, and I found the sword. The sword was just so cool. Like, it says stuff, and it opens up, and the thing flops open. And I've picked up almost every figure from that Thundercats line.
And then you're picking up the 4-inch line then, too.
I pick up the 4-inch line, and then I picked up two of the larger scale, the Lion-O and the Panthro.
Yeah, yeah.
So that just keeps... I just think it's a really well done line. The articulation is great. The accessories are cool. I mean, I just think it's really, really cool. And the sword is awesome. I won't pick up the vehicles, and I won't pick up the castle thing or whatever, but I think those are cool.
Right.
The occasional Hasbro Kenner vintage Star Wars figure. I'll grab one of those.
Are you getting not just classic characters, but the prequel characters on
no
the vintage cards?
No. Just the classic characters.
Okay.
Just classic.
All right.
In fact, Jeff Cope, another little name
yep
I'll throw out there,
yep,
managed to find me not one, but two of the Luke Dagobah X-Wing pilot, because I've never been able to... I thought that was a myth, but he found two of those. And then I picked up a couple of these little Mega Block things. The little.
Oh, yes.
Because I found the Captain America, they did like a little hydropod.
Mm-hmm.
Hydra pod, sorry. Which Mattel, sorry.
Megablox?
Mattel, am I thinking of? Who does all the.
The.
My Marvel stuff. Hasbro.
No, that's Hasbro, yeah.
Hasbro did not make, you know, they made like a Hummer or something.
Oh,
that,
right.
Like
yeah, yeah,
in
yeah.
Red, white, and blue. They didn't make the Hydra thing, but I found this little Mega Block thing. Like, that's the Hydra. That's the end of the thing with the. And then the little Captain America, like this big, and it looks just like him, and he's got like a little shield, and he's got great articulation. And then I found out there's a whole world of these little Mega Blocks figures.
Yeah, the second series, they're doing blind bagged figures
and
based
I found,
on the movies.
I found Wolverine.
Mm-hmm.
I found Loki. I found another Captain America. And Spy Monkey.
Yes,
is trying
sure.
to find me because he can, he's good at.
I have a
feeling.
Video of him because I went out with them on Sunday on a toy run, and I was looking for some of the Lego minifigures, and I had five of them.
Uh-huh.
He found me 11 of them by feeling.
By feeling the.
Without a duplicate.
He said you
he
could.
It
said,
is his superpower.
He said he could find, you know, by the head or the accessory that's in there or whatever.
It's remarkable.
And he's trying to find the stuff that I don't.
Yeah.
But those are cool because, like, it's a finite amount that's out there.
Right.
They're this big. So I could put them all into a little box and put them in a drawer and I don't have to worry about it.
Well, the question is, though, also announced at Comic-Con was that Lego has got a DC and a Marvel license now, so they're going to start doing.
See, I've never been a Lego guy, and I get it. I understand people dig it, but these little guys, these little things, they move, the elbows move, the little feet move, and they're kind of caricaturish, but not really. And like that little Loki is like amazing. It's just awesome, you know, the headgear and everything. But you know, I guess. I've spent more money and time on DVDs and music the past few months than toys, really. But that's what I picked up, I think, mostly, is the Thundercats stuff.
It's been kind of a dry spell, I felt like, for a while, but now all of a sudden I'm finding a ton of stuff.
I
picked up the NECA RoboCop. I've been looking forward to that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I saw that.
I've been waiting for that figure. It's great. Their Gremlins line is out, the Mogwais.
Yeah,
first
very
wave.
Cool.
Those are awesome.
You know what's a cool figure, too, that they did is the new Freddy.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
They did a Freddy Krueger from the first Nightmare.
Yeah.
But, again, this goes back to my liking more. He comes with a skull head.
Yep.
He's got a hat that comes off. He's got regular arms. And then he's got big, mega long arms, like when he goes down.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
you
yeah.
know, he does that thing.
Yep.
So that to me is getting your money's worth.
Well, like the RoboCop too, you know, he's got the gun, he's got a switchable hand, so he's got the spike coming out of it.
Oh, cool!
And like the pistons work in his ankles, you know,
nice.
Stuff like that. It's a really lovely figure. I just found the Warriors 3 from the Thor movie line.
Oh,
those have been out for a while, but I can't find them in L.A.
I haven't found. I'd like to get the head the lead ice. Frost Giant.
Right, yeah.
I'd like to find him, and I'd like to find the Destroyer.
Yeah, I found the Destroyer, too. I just found
him. Never found those. Yeah. I don't care about the... That was, to me, the one tiny weak point of Thor.
Were
the Warriors 3.
Oh.
Yeah.
I see.
And it's not their fault. They were there for a little bit of comic relief,
right.
And I just thought it was a little... They were a little too big and broad.
Yeah.
But again, trying to stay faithful, I think, to the characters in the comic book.
Yeah.
But doesn't always translate, I don't think.
So like DC UC Wave 19, that's the I just got that with the Stripe Build-A-Figure. Mattel sent me a couple of new...
I don't ever see this stuff. I never even find
that's,
it.
It's just starting to hit. But yeah, Mattel just sent me, you know, a couple of things to review. The Legion of Superhero 12-pack, which is awesome. I'm not a huge Legion fan, but
now,
that's
was that part
so
of the,
well done.
Was that part of the subscription thing that was going to happen?
No.
Or? No, it's a separate...
The subscription thing, yeah, starts next year. So
okay.
It's... but that... a couple of the Green Lantern Movie Master things. So I'm building my Parallax.
You found them? I mean,
well,
I.
Well, they sent them to me.
Oh,
they sent me early
okay.
samples to,
that,
to put
clearly,
up on the site,
you
so.
Have to start a toy site, have it build up over the 6 years,
no,
because
you
can't get any of this stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, the movie, like, when do they come? Like, all that were ever out was Hal Jordan, the fish guy, There was never, like, at Comic-Con, some guys had, like, the maskless Hal Jordan, and they had Sinestro, but none of them...
Are you looking for that?
Well, I mean, if I saw one and it was like...
Because there's places, like Amazon has been carrying that wave and stuff.
Well, what is it, like $30 a figure? I mean, it's
no,
like...
No, it's very reasonable.
Is it? Okay.
Yeah. But just tell me and I can tell you where to look.
Well, I'll have a look. I mean, I'm complaining more just to complain, I guess, because you should be able to find some of this stuff when the movie comes out. Oh, that's the other thing, the Captain America, the Hydra guys.
Yeah.
Boy, I can find Captain America in jungle gear and in a tank top and, you know, bikini wear, you know, but I can't find a Hydra guy to fight him with.
See, and they're just starting to hit in L.A. because I've just recently found the regular one and the comic version where he's bright green with the yellow stripes.
Yeah,
and
no, I haven't found it.
I've seen him 2 weekends in a row now. So
I don't know where you go.
Toys R Us.
Where though? The moon? I don't know where.
No.
I know of two of them. I know one on La Cienega. I know one in Burbank, and I've you know.
It's over here on the west side, baby.
Because I don't where. On the west side?
There's one on Rosecrans. I saw it there.
Okay.
And then I think the first time I found him was in Torrance.
Yeah, because the one in Burbank is just getting the Super Mario Brothers movie figures in. That's how far back they're going.
Because I used to, you know, I used to work in Burbank at that Toys R Us. And that Toys R Us, you know.
It's like
now we're
West
suddenly
town.
Region specific. You know, for those of you listening in Germany, disregard this. But the Toys R Us in Burbank is heavily mined by the Hot Wheels guys.
Sorry.
Every morning, because a lot of those guys are drivers and teamsters. They work overnight and then they wait out in front of that Toys R Us. It's
this whole Hot Wheels culture. These I don't know anything about it, and I don't want to know. But you know, but you must have it when like you, because I don't, you know. I'll be at Target more than any place because I go there for other things, you know, to get for the house or whatever. And you know that guy that comes around the corner, like you're in the same aisle and you see that guy and you go, I know this guy. I mean, I know what you're here for. You're not with a kid, you know, you're looking for this stuff. And then I quickly get out of that section. I just go, today's not the day I'm going to be looking through figures because I don't want to be next to this guy. And I don't want to turn into this guy.
For some people, you are.
I know.
That guy.
That's what worries me. That's what worries me. So I've been cutting down a bit here and there, and I've got stuff that I think I need to go through and kind of, you know, shift, sort of that I have at home and kind of get rid of stuff.
All right. Final topic, just quickly, because I know you're a huge audiophile. What are you listening to right now? What do you like in the music world?
Wow. Well, I've been picking up first and foremost. Because in honor of Freddie's 65th birthday, all the Queen reissues. I've been picking all those up the past few months. The latest batch, I think, just came out in the UK. But I've been picking all those up just to have them, just to have the, you know, nice cleaned up audio. And the bonus tracks are great. The Flash Gordon soundtrack is amazing. It sounds better than ever. And the bonus tracks are fantastic. I picked up Harry Nilsson Schmilsson. There was a reissue of that with a bunch of bonus tracks. I picked up Arctic Monkeys' newest one, which is great. God, I'm drawing a blank now. There was something else that I grabbed, but the newest was Neil Finn's new project.
Okay, yeah.
You know how much I love Neil Finn. Crowded House, Split Ends.
Yep.
He and his brother Tim, solo stuff. He formed a band with his wife called Pajama Club.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And it just came out. The album just came out like a week ago, I think. And it's the two of them, and then another guy and gal or something. And it's really good. It's different. It's still melodic like all his stuff is, but it's a little bit almost more. There's like a garage kind of a sound to it. Some of it, but it's great. It's definitely worth picking up. I would recommend that.
All right. For me, the most recent thing I bought was. Jonathan Coulton just released his new album.
Jonathan Coulton.
He should be known to this group because he does kind of a lot of what people call nerd rock. You know, he writes these very earnest songs about you know, he sounds like a sweet love song, but when you really listen to it, you can tell it's about a giant squid and stuff like that.
Jonathan Coulton.
Jonathan Coulton.
Okay, I got it.
I'll float you some of his stuff, but he did a song called Code Monkey about like programmers. he does a song called Re Your Brains, which is a memo that zombies are writing to the people that are trapped in the business inside that they're trying to kill.
Wow.
Stuff. So really interesting stuff.
Sounds like highbrow nerd rock.
Yeah, yeah. But he just did a new album, and it's the first time he's done it with a full band.
Okay.
It was produced with one of the Johns from They Might Be Giants.
I was just going to say, this sounds like a They Might Be Giants.
And he's actually on tour right now, the opening act for They Might Be Giants.
That makes sense.
And this new album is phenomenal. I can't stop listening to it.
Now,
are you
listening and laughing at the same time, or are you just digging the music?
Both.
Okay.
It's both. And this album is not as much about, you know, like monkeys and dogs and mm-hmm. zombies and robots and evil scientists, but still just so much great stuff on there. And
wow, okay.
It's available right now just as a download. He doesn't have physical copies of it yet.
Okay. What's it called?
Artificial Heart is the new album. Jonathan Colton, it's at jonathancolton.com where you can find out where to order it. But really, really dynamite stuff. Can't recommend it highly enough. And you should check out his old stuff, too, because it's very funny, but still very well done.
You know,
catchy stuff.
Eric Eckstein would like this.
Yeah,
probably.
Yeah.
He would probably.
He knows who Jonathan Colton is.
Oh, he does?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. That makes sense.
Yeah, we've conversed a
little. He loves the whole
that.
Weird Al.
Weird Al is like
one of his idols. Yes. Not my bag at all, but...
I like the Weird Al.
But I will...
I stood next to Weird Al at a Ben Folds concert.
Really?
Probably 10 years ago.
I had a drink with him at the Oscars many years ago. And I thought, and I remember I wanted to just because I thought, I'm not supposed to be here. What are you doing here? Like you know, when you're a kid and you think about the Oscars, you think like, you know, everybody that's famous, anybody, you know, it's just like John Wayne and, you know, Kirk Douglas. And if you're not remotely famous, you're not getting into the parking lot. Forget it. And then you go eventually as an adult, and I've been several times, and you go and it's like, there's like 10% famous people. And then there's all these people that you're like, you know what I mean? They're just like, you know, Dolph Lundgren or whoever. They're just like, how did you get, or like a kid, you know, kids.
Are you saying Dolph Lundgren is not famous?
No,
is that
no.
what you're saying here,
I just
sir?
Don't know if he's, you know, Motion Picture Academy of Arts and Sciences, caliber, maybe.
I see.
But, you know, and then Weird Al. And then like bumped into Weird Al. Like, what is he doing here? Like,
he made a movie. He actually...
He did,
that's,
UHF.
That's where I first met him, UHF. He filmed in Tulsa, Oklahoma, my hometown.
Wow.
So that's where I knew him from. My brother had a drink with him.
Wow.
Back in the day. But yeah, then I was standing next to him at the Ben Folds concert. I think it was at... I can't remember where it was now, but it was standing room only, and it was him with his wife, then his fiance, and... You know, I sort of mentioned, hey, I'm from Tulsa. I met you a long time ago. And very gracious, introduced me for his wife. He's like, this is, you know, I'm sort of introducing my fiance to Ben Folds. You know, she wasn't familiar with it, so this is her first concert.
Wow.
And then their next projects, both of them, Ben Folds played on a Weird Al track, and Weird Al played
Ben Folds?
On a Ben Folds thing.
Did you get the, because see, I'm not a Ben Folds guy either at
that
all.
Is a mistake.
But.
I will fill your life with Ben Folds.
But, yeah, and I've heard that before.
Like, whoa!
I did pick up the Nick Hornby Ben Folds.
Oh, that's great.
Because I love Nick Hornby.
Great.
So I picked that up. I have not, I've downloaded it, but I haven't, like, dove into it. I got it with the book, you know, with all the stuff.
I got it, that too.
But I haven't really been able to get into it too much yet. But I did pick it up because of Hornby, so.
Yeah.
And I wanted to get the Shatner one, too.
The Shatner
just because
one
of,
is
oh,
a revelation.
That's going to be coming out any day.
Well,
the second one.
Yeah, but I don't think Ben Folds did the second
one. No, but
one.
The second one is like he's doing all like
yeah,
rock.
It's all space songs about rock and roll songs about space.
Yeah.
But the Shatner one that Ben Folds produced, I thought was going to be a novelty album.
No, I've heard bits of it.
And when you actually sit down and listen to it, you know, there's some funny things to it, certainly. But there is some things on there so raw and so personal, you feel like you probably shouldn't be listening
about
to it.
About the Shat?
Well, there's a song about finding his wife drowned in the swimming pool. And it's this sort of monologue of that. And it's just like, it's really surprising.
And Jarvis Cocker's on it, too.
And like, fantastic. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, loads of people are on that. Yeah,
Brad Paisley. I mean, yeah.
And the new one I think is out like the next month or something.
Yeah.
I just read
Henry
something
Rollins
about it.
Does a.
But there's people on the new one too that are like, there's guests on the new one that are like, I'm this isn't right. But like Jimmy Page, there's someone that. You just go some guitars. I'm like, whoa, like they got somebody big on this new record too.
Yeah.
But it's Shatner.
It
what
is.
What can you say?
You're a good, close, personal friend.
Very
William
good
Shatner.
Friends with William Shatner. We're very, very, very good friends.
All right. Well,
he's actually waiting in the car. Right
we've
now.
Run about a half hour longer than we said.
We did?
To. Yeah, we did.
How long was this going to be?
It was going to be about 45 minutes, and we're at about a minute 17, or an hour 18
Shit,
minutes.
Shit, really?
Yeah, yeah. Hey, there's another swear word for the kids.
Sorry.
So we'll end it here.
Yes.
Hope you liked it.
It was way too long. So we've lost. No one's listening right now. We could be talking about anything right now.
That's true.
You know?
So
let's do the War of the Worlds. Let's reenact the War of the Worlds.
We're not going to do that right now. We'll try that for next.
No one's listening.
We'll do War of the Worlds with our phony British accents.
All right, next
episode. Next time. Hope you guys enjoyed it. Give us some feedback. We'd love to hear from you. Send in questions. We'll answer questions for you in the next one. Anything you want to talk about?
No, next one, questions would be great.
And we've been talking about some guests to bring in and talk. We know a fair amount of people. So, this is a lot of fun. Let's do this again.
Great. I enjoyed it.
All right. Geek Show Inherit, Episode 1. In the can.
Shiny. Let's be bad guys. I know Kung Fu.
Show me.
Behold the secrets of nature's deepest mystery.